Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we are going to be shattering some ninjas. I am very excited. So recently, we released an episode about the science and history of a substance called picrete, which is a type of composite ice that was researched in Great Britain and a little bit in Canada during World War II as a potential material for building aircraft carriers. Now, the so-called Berg ship that they wanted to build was made obsolete by changes in other war conditions before it was ever built, so we don't know if it would have worked, but the research on picrete as a material itself remains very interesting. And so if you haven't listened to that episode, I would recommend you go back and check it out now. I think it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we also talk a bit about Game of Thrones in there if you need a little fantasy to encourage you to check that episode out.
Right. So the short version is picrete is a suspension of wood pulp in water ice. And the ideal mixture arrived at by Allied research was something like 86% water to 14% wood pulp. And it had a number of material advantages as a building material or a structural material. This included that the structural properties of picrete were less variable and thus more predictable than regular ice. So if you wanted to make a structure out of ice, you could understand what you were working with a lot more predictably with picrete. But also, picrete melts more slowly than regular ice. It seems like the wood pulp content helps insulate it. So you take the same amount of material of ice versus picrete, the picrete melts a lot slower. Also, picrete is much stronger than regular ice. It can withstand heavier loads and more powerful impacts with less fracture and less plastic deformation. And one of the reasons it's supposed that picrete is stronger than regular ice is that if a crack forms under pressure or impact, the wood pulp fibers prevent the crack from spreading along the full width of the material, so it's just far less susceptible to fracture-based failures. It would maybe kind of deform and sag in a plastic way over time, but it's also less susceptible to that than regular ice is. But anyway, when we were reading about all this, I immediately thought of a parallel type of material to picrete, where various fibrous substances are enmeshed in a suspension that is, by mass, mostly water, and that composite material is our bodies. And I started to wonder, is the principle that makes picrete resistant to fracture The same reason that if you drop a mass of frozen meat on the ground, it doesn't shatter the way a block of ice would. Now, we can come back to that, but this immediately got my brain spinning on another question, which takes us into some outworld territory. Specifically, this question is, if you froze a human body the way Sub-Zero does in Mortal Kombat, or like many other examples we can talk about from movies and games and stuff in a bit, could you shatter that human body with a slick roundhouse kick? Or would a frozen human body be resistant to fracture and shattering? And if so, how far would that resistance go?
Yeah, we actually chatted about this a bit when we recorded the Pycrete episode, but then we ended up cutting it for a couple of reasons. First of all, for length, but then also you wanted to look into it a little bit more, as I recall.
Well, yeah, one reason I think is that the discussion we actually had about it when we originally recorded the episode was kind of incomplete. Like, we talked about how the wood fibers within the Pycrete make it resistant to shattering, how this was probably a reasonable analogy for the frozen flesh of an animal, which is a composite sort of alloy of a different kind with lots of materials enmeshed in between, you know, muscle fibers, fat, protein, bone, and bone has its own different components. It's got a collagen protein component and a mineral hydroxyapatite component. And anyway, for these reasons, a frozen body might be somewhat similar in its resistance to shattering. And of course, I mentioned this a second ago, but there's an experience probably a lot of people can relate to. If you've ever dropped a heavy piece of ice on the ground, it shatters. It's just very brittle. It shatters into a million pieces. But if you drop a similar weight piece of frozen meat from, say, 6 feet in the air, I think you're very unlikely to see anything that looks like shattering. It's more likely to kind of bounce a little bit. It might get bruised as it does so, but it's not going to shatter like glass.
Yeah, and it's similar to how the various frozen foods we bring home from the grocery store. Have you ever opened the box and you're like, oh man, I dropped that frozen pizza and now it's shattered into a million pieces? No, we just don't see that.
Right. So something about the contents, the material makeup of meat, of animal flesh, of body parts seems to make it more resistant to fracture than other, you know, suspensions in water would be. So our initial discussion in that episode, we sort of said, you know, I don't think it's very plausible that you could shatter a body. But after we recorded it, I sort of thought some more and I was like, wait a minute, this really should depend on some more conditions that we didn't actually get into. Like, so could you shatter a human body at regular freezer temperatures around 0 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 18 Celsius? I think under normal circumstances, the answer to that is just no, probably not. So initially, our answer to this question was that the Sub-Zero scenario, where Sub-Zero freezes you with a blast of ice and then kicks you and you shatter all over the place, that's fairly far-fetched. But what we didn't really get into in our original conversation was how far this shatter resistance extends. What if you get the body really, really cold, deep into the Sub-Zero wilds? Then I think the question becomes more interesting.
Absolutely. And also, if we're going to talk about Sub-Zero, I mean, Sub-Zero is not just a guy throwing around some liquid nitrogen. He is supposed to be a Lin Ku grand master. You know, he's a magician, a sorcerer who's using frost magic and martial arts to battle various gods and cyborgs and otherworldly monsters. So before we get back into the science, I want to talk just a little bit about this obsession that emerges, I think largely post-1991, this idea of bad guys and sometimes good guys being frozen, partially frozen, and then partially or entirely shattered as if they were a piece of porcelain.
Now, why would you trace it to 1991?
Well, here's the thing. And I'm not entirely – it's entirely possible that there's some work prior to 1991 that features both the freezing and shattering of an adversary. Certainly, you have examples of things being frozen, enemies being frozen. The classic The Blob comes to mind, right, where the creature's defeated with the cold. But in terms of something being frozen and shattering, 1991 is key because that's when James Cameron's Terminator 2 came out.
Ah, yes.
And I always forget how early in the 90s it actually came out. That always catches me off guard that it was 91, which is, you know, basically the 80s.
Oh, no, 1991 was still the 80s. As we've discussed, canon on this show is that the 1980s ended in 1992. In fact, the most 80s year there ever was, the like most iconic when we think of everything that is the 80s, was the year 1990.
Yeah. I mean, it's the culmination of it, right?
Yeah.
So Terminator 2, of course, iconic sci-fi action blockbuster, famous for a number of reasons, but it also featured some incredible effects, incredible digital effects that just, you know, changed what we expected in films. And there were, you know, so many copycats that, came along afterwards, some better than others. But there's this one sequence in particular where Arnold Schwarzenegger's T-800 Terminator freezes, or accidentally freezes, the liquid metal T-1000 Terminator, played by Robert Patrick, with liquid nitrogen. It's like a factory setting for their fight. And an environmental hazard of that fight is a frozen T-1000. So Arnold lifts up his shotgun, I believe, fires a one-liner at him, as well as a shotgun shell or a slug or something. And it just explodes, just causes the T-1000, the frozen T-1000, to explode into hundreds and hundreds of shards of this now frozen liquid metal, which, of course, then begins to slowly melt and then reform into the T-1000 once more.
As I remember it, he shoots him with a pistol, but I could be wrong.
Is it a pistol? Okay.
That's my memory. I could be wrong. But also, this is definitely when he uses the phrase he's learned, hasta la vista, baby, showing that he has learned humanity from Edward Furlong.
That's right. By the way, I was reading about this film. Again, it's been a very long time since I've seen it. But there's this weird deleted scene that lines up with the whole topic of demonic duck feet on succubi that we've discussed in the past on the show. This idea in medieval and post-medieval Catholic and Protestant culture, the idea that you would have these demons that would disguise themselves as attractive members of, the opposite sex, that would then try and seduce you into sin. But God, taking pity on the pious man or woman, would make sure that the disguise was imperfect. While this demon might take the form of a beautiful woman, it wouldn't be able to get the feet right. The feet would be duck feet, like demonic duck feet. So there's a way out for the pious.
Right. So if you're very observant, if you keep your wits about you, then you would never fall for one of these, like a succubus, because you notice, oh, she's got bird feet.
So, yeah, according to the Internet Movie Database, there is a sequence in the steel mill where the T-1000 it's been previously frozen and then, of course, exploded, and then it's come back together, and not everything's working properly. It's having difficulty maintaining its shape and color, like when it touches other materials. And there's a scene where it's trying to pretend to be Sarah Connor. And then John Connor looks down and sees, oh, it's not Sarah Connor because it has grotesque liquid metal feet instead of human feet.
Right. Its feet are becoming the same texture as the floor that it's walking on, which is a cool detail.
It is. Yeah. But it made me think back to that. The idea that the otherworldly alien pretender can't quite get the feet right on its disguise.
Okay, so you think that it's probably this scene in Terminator 2 where the T-1000 gets shattered that spawns these mini copycats that come afterwards in video games, movies, where everybody's getting frozen and shattered into a million pieces.
Right, like take Sub-Zero, for instance. Okay, a character in the Mortal Kombat video game. Now, Mortal Kombat, the original arcade game, came out in 92, which is really too close to 91 for it to reflect that Terminator 2 death or explosion scene to any significant degree. And perhaps due to that overlap, you don't see any shattering action in the game, really. Sub-Zero can freeze people, and then he can uppercut the frozen person, and some ice goes flying, some blood goes flying, but nobody is shattered. Sub-Zero's original fatality in that game is a blatant Predator homage, rather, in which he rips the opponent's spine out of their body.
Oh, okay. So it was a movie ripoff, even an Arnold movie ripoff, but a different one.
Right. But then, 93, the following year, we see the ports of this game make it out to the different home systems. And this was too violent for Nintendo. Famously, Super Nintendo changed the blood into sweat, and they toned down some of the fatalities. But they did one really cool thing, is they completely replaced Sub-Zero's fatality with one in which first he freezes the opponent, and then he backhands them and shatters them into a million pieces.
Well, that sounds like one of the few upgrades for the Super Nintendo version, which I had as a child, and like was very odd seeing the quote blood coming off people. That was not blood. It was just some weird kind of gray tan colored liquid flying off every time you punch somebody.
Yeah, I had the Genesis version of the game. Mm-hmm. So I had the blood, but I remember being a little jealous of that frozen fatality that Sub-Zero had.
Now, it's definitely in the Mortal Kombat movie, which, whew, dude, if you have not gone back and watched that masterpiece recently, I recommend it. It really, really holds up in the worst possible way. It's one of those movies with early CGI where all of the marketing for it bragged about the CGI, except like I remember the VHS box said, strap yourself in for these amazing morphin sequences. But then you look at it now and it's like, everything has about four corners and it's just assaulting your eyes with poison.
Oh yeah, well this was 95, so plenty of time to really go after that Terminator 2 style and try and use some of that technology. Paul W.S. Anderson was the director, and as weird as some of the CGI is compared to today, I'd have to say the Goro puppet was really cool. They had some nice practical effects mixed up in there as well.
Yeah, I'll give him that.
But we're not talking about Goro today. Goro, maybe we'll come back to another time. But we're talking about Sub-Zero. And that scene does feature some great freeze-shatter action. I think the moment that actually made it into the trailer is Sub-Zero is fighting some red shirt. Like, he's literally fighting a ninja that's wearing red. Mm-hmm. And it's not Ermac or anything. It's just a straight-up red shirt ninja.
No,
and
he's wearing a sign that says, I am here to die.
Yeah. Basically, you know what he's there for. He's a demo ninja. He's here to demonstrate this fatality. So he does a big leaping kick at Sub-Zero right as Sub-Zero unleashes all this crazy, I have to say, and this will come into play later, I feel like there's some really cool, like, atmospheric stuff going on with the effects that Sub-Zero uses here to create his ice magic. Like, he's doing something to the air and perhaps the moisture in the air. And then as that ninja comes flying across the room, bam, Sub-Zero freezes him, ninja smashes into the wall, and just shatters into a million pieces.
Perfection.
Yes. So we'll keep coming back to Sub-Zero, but that was not by any means the only copycat or let's say it wasn't the only film inspired by this kind of freeze and shatter death sequence. You, of course, had Time Cop in 94, directed by Peter Hyams, who also directed 2010 and Outland, which is a kind of a sleazy, not really sleazy, maybe kind of intentionally seedy sci-fi film starring Sean Connery.
Is that the one that's supposed to be High Noon in space?
Yeah, it's a straight up Western, really, with Peter Boyle, I think, is the bad guy. It's I remember digging it when I was younger, but there's another one I haven't seen in forever. Time Cop, however, features a time-traveling time cop, as you would expect, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, and a great villain role, really a dual villain role, because he plays himself as the present version of himself and a past version of himself, played by the late Ron Silver. And there's one scene in particular where a henchman gets his arm frozen, again, by liquid nitrogen that just happens to be there in the space where people are fighting. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme kicks that frozen arm and shatters it.
There's actually, just involving an arm, I remembered there's a scene in the older version, the movie adaptation of Snowpiercer, where a character is punished by having their arm stuck outside into the cold, and then it gets pulled back in and it's frozen solid and they smash it.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good more recent example of the frozen shatter death or torment sequence. Another big one from 93 is Demolition Man. It's Stallone versus Wesley Snipes, and Stallone eventually freezes Snipes and kicks his head off, which then shatters.
Am I the only person who saw the first half of this movie about five times and never saw the end? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't think I even saw that much. Is it one that they were showing on, like, Sci-Fi Channel or something a lot of the time?
I guess it must have been. I just remember, like, seeing over and over again the scenes about, like, introducing the premise that the problem with the future is that the cops are not violent enough.
Maybe from my part anyway, I think maybe it was prominently featured in the trailer. And since I never saw the film and only the trailer, that's all I know about it. I know, like, the basic premise and have sort of a general idea about the look of this future.
Well, I think it posits that the whole future is the Galleria. It's just the whole future is like a shopping mall from the 90s.
All right, let's see. A few other quick examples. 1997 saw both the film Cube utilize a freezing trap in there. The 1997 film Alien Resurrection, there's a sequence where this happens to a xenomorph that like escapes and there's a freezing trap and it shatters itself. And then there's one from 2004 that I don't think I'd ever heard of, titled Mindhunters, not to be confused with the recent television series that's actually quite good. No, this is a different beast entirely. And there's a crazy sequence that you can find on YouTube in which a trap, again, some sort of liquid nitrogen powered trap, freezes Christian Slater's character's ankles and then causes him to snap off at the ankles, fall over backwards. And then I guess he's still freezing as he falls over because then he like grotesquely shatters when he hits the ground.
That's rough, man. Now, the one that I can't get out of my head is Jason X, which I know is one of your favorites.
Oh, yes. This is probably my favorite Friday the 13th movie because, of course, Jason X takes place in outer space. And there's a scene, there are multiple, it has a lot of great kills in it, a lot of creative kills, including one scene in which Cyber Jason at this point, I think he's Cyber Jason at this point, dunks a person's face into like a tray or a vat of liquid nitrogen and then shatters their face by smacking it into a tabletop.
So clearly in the 90s, everybody got the bug. The filmmakers saw something. They were like, ooh, shattering people. And they were just on the train. They were ready.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's new. It's a gnarly death scene to include in your violent 90s picture. But then also, I have this feeling that this trope is popular because it also drives home this idea about the exaggerated fragility of the human body. Mm. You know, we see this in various turn to stone tropes. We see it, quite tragically. I think we've discussed in the past on the show delusions in which one believes their body to be essentially be made of glass and be so fragile that they don't dare touch anything.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see like the opposite of it in some action films, especially. I think the ultimate extreme of this is the 1992 Hong Kong action film Ricky O, The Story of Ricky, in which our hero, like a lot of heroes in these films, is pretty much indestructible, but to just an alarming degree. Nothing seems to hurt him. And when he hurts anyone else, when he fights back against bad guys, it seems like the slightest touch just makes them explode like a bag of blood. Everyone else is just so fragile.
Yeah, everybody else is just vegetable soup. I mean, I seem to recall a scene where two characters punch at each other and their fists hit and Ricky splits the other guy's arm down the middle lengthwise, like a mattock splitting a log.
Yeah. Basically, the human body is just made out of balsa wood, according to that film.
Well, maybe we should take a break, and then when we come back, we can talk about the actual relationship between temperature and brittleness.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Now, today, again, we're looking at this question of could you freeze somebody and shatter them like Sub-Zero? There are some complications to this question. Obviously, this is not an experiment you could perform ethically on a real person, right? But, you know, you can seek out some analogies. There's another reason that this question is a little bit hard to answer if you're just trying to reason from general knowledge on materials and mechanics and heat. And that's, of course, that the body is a complex matrix of different kinds of materials all stuck together. So you can look up, say, existing published knowledge on the temperatures where brittle fracture is more likely to happen in materials like common industrial plastics or types of steel. But I have not found a similar chart for animal bodies, and I doubt that there would be such a thing, because who would do that research? Maybe you do that research. If you do, let us know. But in general, there is actually a documented relationship between temperature and brittleness in many materials, and this relationship does extend well beyond the simple transition of water from its liquid to frozen state. So it's not just the freezing of liquids into solids. Even once you have, you know, already frozen things, as they get colder, or things without water content, as they get colder, very often, in fact, almost always, they tend to get more and more brittle. So just one example of this, I was looking at a short, well-presented article on MIT's website, MIT's Ask an Engineer, where they were addressing the question of why plastics get brittle when they get cold. It was by Peter Dunn, and it was interviewing Greg Rutledge from MIT's Department of Chemical Engineering. And so they were looking at the concepts of ductility and brittleness. Now, ductility is the ability of a material to absorb stress by changing shape without breaking. Brittle materials react to stress put on them by fracturing and shattering. And plastics are mostly considered to be ductile because of the behavior of molecules down at the molecular level. Often these molecules themselves can stretch, absorbing energy in the process. But when you add all this together, these molecules can each absorb energy by stretching, and they can dissipate stress from loads or impacts. And this ability to dissipate stress helps prevent fracture. But this depends on the somewhat free motion of individual molecules. So if you were able to zoom all the way down to the molecular level of the material, for a material to be ductile, what you would want to see is the ability of molecules to slide past or through one another. And the analogy that Rutledge uses here is like spaghetti coated with olive oil, right? You cook a bunch of spaghetti and it does not have any oil on it. Obviously, what's it going to do? It's going to stick together in a big clump. You try to stir it up and it does not stir easily. But if you put olive oil on it, suddenly all the noodles, they can kind of slide around. So in a material, especially like a plastic, if the molecules in the material behave this way, where they all kind of stick together in a rigid structure and they can't stretch and they can't slip easily past or through one another, when stress is applied at a particular place, the energy from that stress can't be dissipated by spreading all across the material. So if the stress is too great and the energy can't be dissipated, it'll start to create a crack and then a full fracture. Now, where does temperature come in here? Well, there's something that is known as the glass transition temperature, which they point out is the point where you have an amorphous solid, and this could be like a glass or it could be rubber. They also give the example of cotton candy. It's at the point where that goes from being ductile, like we were just talking about, to being brittle, where it's susceptible to cracks. And so each material has its own temperature where that transition happens. Usually the temperature for most materials that we deal with on the day-to-day is either very high or very low, so you're not going to really observe things going through this transition temperature if you're just doing everyday, you know, stuff. Like, you're dealing with a piece of rubber. Normally, the stuff you would do with it does not take it to its glass transition temperature. So, for example, in the case of tire rubber, they say that the glass transition temperature is negative 72 degrees Celsius. You're not usually getting down that far, so you're not getting to the point where you observe vulcanized rubber becoming brittle. So we're not used to it, but it is a totally real part of physics. And it all depends on the material. Some amorphous solids can become brittle at much more manageable temperatures. The article gives the example of polypropylene, which they say has a glass transition temperature of somewhere between negative 20 and 0 degrees Celsius. So that's within, you know, temperatures you might encounter out on a cold winter day or even in your own freezer. And I have noticed this personally when taking plastic food containers out of the freezer. Mm-hmm. If you drop them or knock them against something, they seem much more prone to cracking or shattering than they are at room temperature. And I have not noticed a similar difference for glass. But I was looking around at some other articles, and it just seems that for all kinds of materials, maybe there are a few exceptions, but for almost anything, if you cool it down really, really cold, it starts getting into territory where it becomes more brittle. Like, there's this term that's often talked about with reference to metals, which is the ductile to brittle transition. So steel is an example here that undergoes a ductile to brittle transition. Some compositions of steel, unfortunately, have ductile to brittle transition temperatures that are within the range of natural fluctuation. So some steel structures can actually become brittle enough to fail by cracking instead of absorbing stress by deforming and reforming under like real world conditions, like winter conditions.
Yeah, there's this case of the Liberty class cargo ships during the Second World War. Mm-hmm. This was a British concept constructed by the U.S. At a low cost for, you know, basically a mass produced cargo option for the war. So they ended up building thousands of these mm-hmm. things, but unfortunately, the metal of their hulls was observed to fail after exposure to frigid North Atlantic waters, frigid enough to make the steel itself brittle. And this was due to some of the issues we're discussing already, but also part of it apparently had to do with the fact that the hulls were welded as opposed to riveted together from separate plates. And this was also compounded by just frequent overloading of the vessels themselves. Mm-hmm. So yeah, another example of what can happen when you take take a ship that is not specifically designed to maybe thrive in like really frigid waters and put them there.
Yeah, and essentially every source I looked at seemed in agreement that this holds true for almost any material, that what we've been mainly talking about, because most of the research seems to be in plastics and metals, you know, things or stuff like glass, things that you would expect to be researched because they are industrial materials. But it would also hold true to some extent for other types of composite materials, things that have mineral content, things that have proteins in them, and this would probably include bodies. So at lower and lower temperatures, the ability of a material to shift and reform at the molecular level continually decreases. The links between molecules become more and more prone to tiny initial defects spreading into full-scale fractures in their crystalline structure. And if you add a lot of these fractures at the same time, basically, you get shattering. So I'm increasingly convinced now that actually, I think if you got a body or a piece of a human body cold enough, you very well could shatter it. So the question at this point would be, what is the level? How cold would it have to get? You know, what is the level? Is it coldness that could actually be achieved in reality? And again, I think just based on what I've been reading, the answer there is probably yes. And you could it's at temperatures that you could actually achieve given something like liquid nitrogen.
You know, the more we talk about this, I would love to see a scene in like a kung fu action film where the villain and the hero are about to square off, and then they both notice that there's a tank of liquid nitrogen behind them, and they're like, whoa, 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 let's go outside. Let's move into a different part of the factory, because this is just, I don't like where this is headed.
It's like the Poochie episode where they never actually get to the fireworks factory, except this is, you know, they never get to the liquid nitrogen.
Oh, man, there has to be a liquid nitrogen sequence in Itchy and Scratchy.
Oh, I'm sure there is. But because they always flip it around on you, it wouldn't be a straightforward shattering. What would it be? It would be something more interesting.
Oh, probably made into ice and then ground up into ice cubes that are somehow still alive in the cocktail that then the mouse is drinking.
You're joking, but they literally did that. That's one
they did
of them.
That? Okay, that's why it comes to me, because it's stuck in my mind somewhere.
Yeah, the eyeball ice cubes become ice cubes in a drink.
There you go.
So liquid nitrogen is a convenient place to investigate this, or I guess it's not a place, a convenient substance with which to investigate this question, because it's something you can actually get huge tubs of. And in its liquid state, liquid nitrogen is somewhere between 63 and 77 Kelvin or so, which is like negative 210 Celsius to 196 Celsius, or negative 346 Fahrenheit to 320 Fahrenheit. Sorry for all the numbers, but just wanted to give you an idea. It's very, very cold. It's boiling at room temperature. If you have a bucket of liquid nitrogen at room temperature, it's kind of like if you put, you know, a pan of water in like a 600 degree oven or something. It's going to be bubbling. It's aggressive stuff, because it wants to convert back into the gas. That's the same gas that's in the air we breathe. It's more than 70% of the air we breathe. So this is very, very cold. If you could submerge a person in liquid nitrogen long enough to actually freeze them all the way through, I'm starting to get the feeling that some kind of shattering, maybe not, you know, a billion pieces glass type shattering, but some significant, you know, chunking off of brittle shards would actually happen. But anyway, this is all just theoretical reasoning based on other things we know about materials. So maybe talk is cheap. Maybe we should look for physical evidence that this has actually happened in the real world.
Yeah, and luckily there have been people that have experimented with this, that have said, you know what, I'm going to get a tank of liquid nitrogen, and I'm going to get something that could stand in for a human head, and we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. Before we get to direct empirical research, first I wanted to see, okay, is there anything documented in nature, right? I combed through a big newspaper database, trying a bunch of different combinations of search terms to find any evidence I could of a documented case of a frozen body being shattered. I found nothing. Oh, I found tons of stuff, but nothing like what we were actually looking for. I found lots of reviews of movies and TV shows, like that one with Christian Slater you mentioned. There were a bunch of articles about that. I found a lot of old crime reports involving frozen bodies and people named Shafter. I found a lot of stuff about frozen seafood and a kind of packaging called a shatter pack, which I think is a terrible name for a type of packaging. But so if there is any natural documented case of a human body being frozen and then shattering, I could not find it. Now, the closest thing I came across was I did find an old Straight Dope column where the author's trying to answer the exact same question, can you shatter a body, and finds a bunch of cases of people being frozen, sort of, or exposed to liquid nitrogen in various ways and not shattering. And the column concludes from this that you probably would not shatter if you were frozen. But I don't think any of the cases that the column looks at really count, because it's stuff like somebody gets liquid nitrogen spilled on them, which, you know, in fact, one thing that seems to be true is that you can probably safely, I mean, don't try this at home, but you can probably safely get a little bit of liquid nitrogen splashed against your skin and you'd be okay, because the Leidenfrost effect immediately turns it into gas that insulates your skin from the freezing cold liquid itself. Now, if you were like to dip your hand in it or have continued exposure, obviously that would be extremely bad. There was one case documented in the Straight Dope column of a person who apparently dipped their foot in a container of liquid nitrogen and kept it there. It's not quite clear why this happened, but there was no documentation of that person's foot shattering, though obviously it was massively traumatic to the body. Like, so don't do that at all. Mm-hmm. So that column concludes, quote, judging from the above, I'm guessing fibrous tissue would prevent a body from simply shattering no matter what happened. But then again, okay, so you could take that and say, okay, that sort of holds up with, you know, if you drop a piece of frozen meat from the freezer, it doesn't shatter. So maybe it just wouldn't happen to a body. But I want to come back with a few empirical controlled examples that we can talk about. Now, I have not found any controlled studies published in actual scientific journals about shattering frozen animals or animal parts. Maybe there's something I haven't dug up yet, but I don't think it's out there. But I have come up with a number of informal tests that have been published just on other people's articles, podcasts, videos, YouTube, and stuff. For example, The Naked Scientists, one time they explored this on their podcast in an episode from 2012. Actually, it was an episode that featured recent show guest Kat Arney.
Huh. They didn't freeze her, I hope.
No, unfortunately, Kat was not involved in this particular experiment. Okay, it was a couple of the other hosts. But a couple of the other hosts did an empirical experiment. They explained as follows. You get some chicken pieces, a turkey drumstick. You freeze them with liquid nitrogen and then attempt to smash them with a hammer. So they pour liquid nitrogen all over meat inside a bucket. And after being submerged in the liquid nitrogen for a while, the experimenters believe they've gotten the flesh down to almost negative 200 degrees Celsius, around negative 340 Fahrenheit. And at this temperature, first they experiment with just kind of like banging the frozen meat against a wood block with the hand or dropping it, and this doesn't seem to do much of anything interesting. But then what happens if more force is applied? What if you hit it harder? This appears to be the key. When they hit the nitrogen frozen meat with a hammer, it does in fact shatter. It splits off into many small brittle shards like ice or glass. They say it's 1,000 bits of chicken.
Oh, man. Well, that sounds like the Super NES Sub-Zero fatality right there.
Yeah. And so the host concludes, quote, it does work, but it's an awful lot tougher than you might expect. So if you just fell over, you wouldn't shatter into 1,000 pieces. You might crack a bit. And I think that they are, based on everything I've read, I think they are basically on the money. That brittle shattering of flesh is quite possible, but it requires a very, very cold piece of meat down to like liquid nitrogen level temperatures, and it requires a very, very heavy impact.
Well, everything's coming up Sub-Zero on this one because he has otherworldly ice magic, surely capable of reaching those low temperatures, and is a skilled martial artist who knows just where to hit you and how hard to create this death art that he calls a fatality.
So, and also, if you want to investigate this for yourself, fortunately, in this age of widely distributed video content, There's a bunch of video, too. You can see it for yourself, assuming there's no video trickery involved. I think, given the amount of content I've seen like this, that's, you know, it's probably not all explained by video trickery. So there are tons of videos of people deep freezing various meats, animal bones, model bodies, and other fleshy objects with liquid nitrogen, and then shattering them. You know, the internet will provide. So just mentioning a couple of examples I found. One of these was a video from a cooking channel called Chef Steps that was attempting to cut through a cow femur with a heavy cleaver. And with the femur unfrozen, it takes a bunch of heavy strokes and like swinging it like an axe. I think it took at least a half dozen strokes. But when a cow femur is frozen in liquid nitrogen, it seems to kind of explode in a shower of brittle pieces after one hit with the same cleaver. And you might think, well, wow, even a cow femur, I mean, that's a really, really thick bone. But to comment on this, you know, you might sometimes think of bones as something that is naturally brittle to begin with, right? It's kind of like a rock. But bones are actually excellent naturally designed shock absorbers when at normal temperatures. I mean, think about all of the stuff you do with your body that just doesn't seem quite right if your bones were actually composed of, say, you know, like rock material of the same size and shape as your bones.
Yeah, they really are quite durable. I guess part of it is we tend to only notice them, you know, when they're hurting or broken or bruised, right? That's when we begin to realize, oh, my bones.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a good bone, it's like a great film director is the director you don't notice. Great bones are bones you don't think about because they just do the job. They're just there for you. And so bones are not like rocks. They're not composed entirely of brittle mineral content. Instead, they're kind of like a natural mesh of one part structural mineral, but then softer, more ductile material that can stretch and flex and dissipate mechanical stress. And I think of the things that that help absorb and dissipate impact stress on bones, one of them, of course, is collagen, which is a protein content in the bones that's found throughout the hydroxyapatite crystal structure of your bones. But on a deeper chemical level, I also came across an interesting, relatively recent finding that's about exactly what's going on with bones that helps them flex like this. So it was a paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of the Sciences in 2014 by Davies et al. I think it was a team based primarily out of Cambridge University. But the short version is that they discovered that a major factor helping bones absorb shock without shattering is what they call a goo that is trapped in between the mineral crystals in our bones. And this goo is actually made of a viscous solution of water containing citrate, which is interesting. So citrate is a derivative of citric acid. It's a natural byproduct of cell metabolism. But various forms of citrates have tons of uses in chemistry, like one that I think about in food uses is trisodium citrate. It's one of the sodium salts of citric acid, and it has a bunch of uses in foods, for example, emulsified cheese sauces. You know, you ever wonder, like, what makes something like Velveeta-style cheese melt so smoothly instead of breaking and getting all greasy? It's because it has a citrate-based emulsifier in it, sodium citrate.
Huh.
Actually, I don't know for sure if Velveeta in particular uses that one, but I know some, like, processed melting cheeses do. So a good amount of American cheese is going to have some kind of emulsifier like that. But anyway, so back to bones, like within our bones, they've got this fluid citrate that allows molecules to slip and slide past each other, like we were talking about earlier. And this makes the bones more ductile and less brittle and able to absorb loads and impacts without breaking nearly as easily as they would if they were purely rigid mineral structures like rocks. And there are other interesting videos you can find, too. I found one kind of strange video of a pig heart submerged in liquid nitrogen, and it was left in there until it was deep frozen. And then it was shattered by being thrown against the floor. Assuming that's real, that seems like pretty good evidence. I've seen another one where some people deep froze a sort of simulated model of a frozen human head. And then they had a boxer smash it with a heavy punch. It kind of shattered. The damage was reasonably shattery. So I think I've been convinced. I think the answer is clearly that While animal flesh, including a human body, is not very likely to shatter at regular freezer temperatures like 0 degrees Fahrenheit or a negative 18 Celsius, if you get it really, really cold in the neighborhood of liquid nitrogen temperatures, and then you hit it with a very, very heavy impact, shattering becomes a much more realistic reaction. So anyway, consider me a convert.
Converted to the ways of Sub-Zero. All right, on that note, we're going to take one more break. But when we come back, I have some additional stuff to throw in about this idea of shattering ice magic and what else we could possibly pull out of the natural world to back this up.
I can't wait.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details.
Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. So, Robert, hit me with some shattering ice magic.
All right. I have kind of a shattering ice magic buffet here, a few different offerings here. So first of all, there's frost shattering. This is something we mentioned briefly in the Pycrete episode, but one way that we naturally see stone shattered via freezing water occurs via frost shattering. It's a gradual process by which the freezing of water in pore spaces and joints in rock leads to fragmentation.
Okay, so this is actually caused by the freezing process itself.
Right. And, the expansion of water in little cracks and all. This gets down to, like, why do we have potholes, right?
Yeah.
Because you end up with water. One of the reasons is you end up with water getting into little cracks in the road. It freezes. It expands. It shatters the stonework there and then it has to be repaired.
Right.
So I don't know how that really helps out Sub-Zero, but it's worth mentioning.
Well, I mean, I think it is worth mentioning that things with water content in them undergo some natural trauma in the freezing process. So like
yes.
some foods that you freeze don't do so well when freezing. Like you thaw them out and eat them later, and maybe something about the texture is kind of wrong. I mean, like freezing can form crystals that just harm the cells in the food.
Yeah. Now, another idea that comes to mind, this is more of, I guess, a munitions-based thing to think about, but you have dry ice bombs, which you absolutely should not try and make. They're illegal in places and dangerous, but a simple but dangerous explosive device can be made using dry ice, which, again, dry ice is solid carbon dioxide. And basically, all this really does is just shows that, there's a lot of power bound up in the manipulation of the phases of matter, especially when it comes to the expansion and contraction of the substances in question.
Okay.
And that's going to play more into, like, my main idea here, and that is, okay, Sub-Zero, he has this ice magic. He's a master of ice. He can make it into weapons. He can freeze people as they fly through the air. He can do these complex fatalities. But is he only a master of ice phase one? Or might he have magical access to all 17 types of crystalline ice and 3 types of amorphous ice that we touched on in our previous episode?
Oh, okay. Is he the master of many worlds?
Yeah, I mean, and that's just known ice. I think they're in total somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 or so theoretical phases of water ice that could be possible. So the question that one might raise is, might there be varieties of ice that would prove more advantageous to magical martial arts than even typical everyday ice, which, of course, is pretty powerful. We've already discussed how it seems like it is you can certainly, like, shatter a human head or, given enough time, shatter the stone face of a mountain with its power. But I started looking around about this. What other varieties of ice are out there? For example, one that came to mind was, what if Sub-Zero, instead of only depending on phase one ice water, what if he was also a master of what is referred to as super ionic ice, or ice 18? Now, this is one of the high pressure ices that can exist in places like the depths of Uranus and Neptune. And it has been created in the lab on Earth as well. For instance, in 2019, University of Rochester scientists at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California used 6 giant laser beams to compress water into this exotic ice form. So this is really weird stuff, and I have to say, when you read about this, it really bucks the everyday idea of what ice even is, and it also makes you realize, like, the slim pressure and temperature constraints that make up the human world and ultimately our sort of default understanding of reality.
Right.
So again, this is this weird ice. This ice 18 is made via extreme pressure. We're talking 1 to 4 million times the pressure of Earth's atmosphere, and it depends on extreme temperatures of 3,000 to 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Huh.
Yeah. So
that doesn't sound like ice.
I know it's really hot. But and it's also it's four times as dense as normal ice, and it's it's hot and it's also black. Hmm. And if you were to take this ice and suddenly expose it to Earth's surface to air pressure, it would rapidly decompress.
Does that mean explode, or do we not know?
Well, I couldn't find a write-up that that specifically mentioned explosion, but we know that rapid decompression can, you know, it's the sort of thing that can produce something that could be described as an explosion. So the way I like to imagine it, you could have Sub-Zero. Feel free, you know, video game makers, to steal this for your next video game. But you could have Sub-Zero manipulates the atmosphere around an individual's body, then crushes them down to a mass of high-pressure, high-temperature, black superionic ice. And then he releases this magical pressure that he's built up around it, and then your crumpled, blackened, frozen, high-temperature body would then rapidly decompress and just explode all over the screen.
I like it. Put it in Mortal Kombat 17 or whatever they're on now.
Yeah, whichever one's next. Now, a lot of other ice phases are certainly higher density as well, not necessarily as high density as these, but you also have some that are lower density ices as well, both known and theorized, including, I think, Ice-16 is an example of that. But Ice-16 wouldn't really do Sub-Zero much good unless, based on some of the articles I was looking at, unless he was looking to harvest gas from the seafloor and transport it in pipes. That's one of the main areas where they see Ice-16 research as having a real-world benefit. But our universe is home to forms of ice far colder, such as Ice-14, which at around roughly, I think, negative 160 degrees Celsius or negative 256 degrees Fahrenheit. And this is apparently the coldest ice we've yet found in the natural world. And this, too, is found on the icy moons and outer planets. So I like the idea of Sub-Zero potentially using that as well, the idea of an ice sorcerer using plutonic ice against the occasional literal thunder god that he does battle with.
That is good. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. Ice Warlock and the external power that the Warlock contacts to get his power is a being that lives on Pluto.
Yeah, some sort of ice god from the outer reaches of the solar system. I mean, where else would an ice god live?
I know we've been saying we're giving out these ideas for free. Maybe we should just TM stamp everything we're saying. No, you can't have it. We're making this game.
All right. Well, I have one more example to discuss here on the topic of frozen things and explosions, because there's the matter of the mysterious Siberian permafrost craters to consider. Craters that, at least in some photos, especially I was looking at one from 2017 that I've included for you to hear, for you to see as well, Joe. It's the crater of what has been dubbed Yamal Crater from the Yamal Peninsula in northern Siberia, and it looks hauntingly like a scene from John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh yeah, the ice pit where the spaceship mm-hmm. was.
Yeah, it's 40 meters wide. That's 131 feet. So it's pretty big. And if you're looking at it, you get the impression that there's either been some sort of an impact or there's been an escape. Something has been freed from its icy prison. And this seems to be exactly the case, only instead of an ancient alien visitor shape-shifting its way, you know, out of the ice and ultimately out of the frigid wasteland, instead it is methane exploding out of the permafrost.
Whoa, buried natural bombs.
Yeah, so basically think to the frozen woolly mammoth. So the frozen permafrost is an icebox storing these exceptional cases of preserved organic matter, but there's plenty of less exciting stuff frozen in there as well. Since it's frozen, none of it truly rots, at least not until the permafrost heats up due to climate change. And as that happens, the rot finally finds these ancient morsels, releasing carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, all greenhouse gases, by the way.
Now, methane explosions, they're not known to be the cause of the craters, right? It's just a hypothesized possible explanation.
That's my understanding of it. I was looking around at different articles about it because there's other stuff, too, that they've looked at. There's something similar seems to have happened thousands of years ago on the floor of the Arctic Ocean in places where it seems like methane venting or even explosions may have occurred, resulting in large craters, some 3,000 feet wide, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we're talking about rare occurrences in remote tundra regions. So The way this would supposedly work is the frost would heave up over the course of a year or so, but then that's ultimately hard to observe. And I also don't think there have been any actual explosions witnessed. What you have instead, you'll have some, you know, some people will find this big crater. There'll be some accounts from locals about some loud noise they heard. In some cases, reports of smoke or flame. But other than that, like, again, there's no footage of this occurring as far as I know. And on top of that, these craters then tend to turn into lakes within a couple of years and are hard to distinguish from other lakes. This, according to Evigny Colvillen of the Skoltek Center for Hydrocarbon Recovery.
Man, this is one of those things where there's so much that's potentially amazing in the world that just nobody's around to see.
Yeah, it's so as far as I understand, the research is still ongoing, and scientists are still looking into this. For instance, researchers are still debating whether permafrost melting is going to release mostly methane or mostly carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Still figuring all of that out.
Well, either way, I mean, we don't want more methane or carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Right, right. The melting of the permafrost is alarming, certainly, no matter what the exact ramifications are.
Well, but what does it mean for sub-zero?
I don't know, maybe nothing, but it could also provide a mechanism by which a frozen warrior might explode given enough time. I don't know, depends how you look at it. He generally doesn't let you stand there and rot, but they do have a fighter now that is a master of time, so they could double team a corpse and make it, freeze it and then let it rot and then it explodes, and you know, the time master speeds it up there so that it does that.
That seems like cheating. If you're a master of time, you're just unbeatable, right? Even if you're about to lose, you can always go back to start over again.
I guess, but that's how video games work, right? So maybe he's perfect.
Oh, yeah. He's the living example of save scrubbing.
Yes, yes.
Well, this one's been fun, Robert.
Yes, yeah, it has. Obviously, we'd love to hear from everyone out there about your frozen food exploits, about your viewing experience with 90s cinema and the various things that get frozen and exploded, or if you have some feedback about our thoughts on the Mortal Kombat franchise, we'd love to hear from you on that as well. Or do you have any direct experience of these permafrost regions we've been discussing here? Perhaps you have some feedback there. In the meantime, if you would like to listen to other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you can find us wherever you get your podcast and wherever that happens to be. We just ask that you rate, review, and subscribe.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you'd like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.